You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Some parts are graphic in nature, and listener discretion is advised. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. If you were to arrive in the Galapagos Islands in the early 1930s, Floriana Island would be one of the few places you could stop and meet some people. There were three homes, all built by their European inhabitants. The landing beach was Post Office Bay, where a large mailbox stood. The mailbox was built in the 18th century by whalers, hoping to send or receive mail to and from England. In 1932, a sign on the letterbox said, "Whoever you are, friends, 2 hours from here is Hacienda Paradiso, a little spot where the weary traveler is happy to find some rest, refreshment, and peace on his way through life." Life, this little bit of eternity chained to a clock, is so short after all, so let us be happy, let us be good. At paradise, you have no name but one, friend. We will share with you the salt of the sea, the vegetables of our little garden, the fruits of our trees, the fresh water running down from the rocks. We will share with you what other friends who passed by gave us. We will spend with you some moments of life and give you the happiness and peace that God put into our heart and mind. Since we have left the restless turmoil of the metropolis to the quiet of centuries, which has laid its mantle upon the Galapagos. Baroness Wagner, Robert Philipson, Rudolph Lorenz. People from far and wide knew about Baroness Wagner, who had claimed the title of Empress of the Galapagos for herself. She lived on Floriana Island with her 2 lovers and loved living a scandalous lifestyle. Also on the island were the Ritters and the Whitmers, 2 German families with vast differences themselves. The island was too small for these strong-willed pioneering individuals, and before long, the explosive situation would end in tragedy. By the end of 1934, 5 of them were no longer alive, leaving countless unanswered questions. In 1929, physician and dentist, 43-year-old Friedrich Ritter, ran a well-established medical practice. He had been married to opera singer Milla Clark for just over 20 years, and he felt that he needed a change in his life. Hailing from a family of farmers, Ritter felt a strong connection to nature. Ritter found a kindred spirit in one of his patients, Dora Strauch Kerwin. 28-year-old Dora, a teacher, suffered from multiple sclerosis and fell in love with her doctor's philosophical mind. As time went on, they felt they were being stifled by societal norms, living in the ever-evolving city of Berlin. After the First World War, average Europeans were still experiencing social and economic uncertainty. In the late 1920s, political tensions were rising as the Nazi Party rose to prominence. No one could have foreseen that another war would erupt a decade later. In the repose, between the wars, people returned to nature and appreciated basic things in life. As aviation took the world by storm, stories of explorers across the globe captured the imagination of the world. Friedrich and Dora were well-versed in travel literature and dreamed of a better life. They wanted to live off the land, enjoy a vegetarian diet, and exist in peace without societal constraints. Friedrich followed the philosophy of Nietzsche and Lao Tse and quoted both of them often. Part of his reason to go off-grid was so he could finish his own theosophical work. Dora was passionately in love with the doctor, and he felt that she was the only person who understood his philosophy. She agreed to follow her lover to the end of the earth to live the life they were talking about. She introduced her husband, a high school principal, to Friedrich's wife, hoping they would find comfort in each other's arms. They explicitly asked them to look after each other once they were gone. Friedrich took his typewriter and set sail with the adoring Dora from Amsterdam on July 3, 1929. There was a diary entry shortly after he left Europe. "Leaving behind me a lucrative practice of medicine in Berlin, I and my comrade were in fact turning our backs forever upon civilization and the society of our fellow men. Of our own free will and choice, we are going into exile to seek, in the solitude of an almost desert island in the far Pacific, the independence, the peace of mind, the opportunity to cultivate our reflective powers to the fullest, which are denied to man by the complexities of modern life. The Galapagos is made up of small, rocky, and dry islands in the Pacific Ocean, about 1,000 kilometers off the coast of Ecuador. Some of the rarest animal species in the world can be found in this archipelago of islands, which makes it a desirable paradise for nature lovers. It was Charles Darwin's visit to these islands in 1835 that brought them to the attention of educated Europeans. He published his drawings and theories, and everyone who read The Origin of Species were intrigued and wanted to learn more about the exotic islands. We'll take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors. In the 21st century, Galapagos is still, for the most part, undeveloped and remote. In 1929, it was one of the most isolated places on the planet. The couple from Berlin decided to set up home on Floriana Island, which is sometimes called Charles Island. It's at the southernmost end of the archipelago, and the entire land area is 67 square miles. The small islet of Floriana had been a prison colony in the 19th century. That is, until captors revolted against the warden, who always put his vicious dog on them. The situation caused Ecuadorian authorities to shut down the prison, and all the dwellings were abandoned. In the early 1920s, Norwegian settlers made it to the island, but they found the challenges of colonizing the land insurmountable. There was too little water and hardly any food. Friedrich Ritter and Doris Stock Irwin arrived in Guayaquil, Ecuador, and made the journey by ship to Post Office Bay on Floriana Island, where they arrived on the 17th of September, 1929. They had trunks of supplies like metal sheets for housing and some essential household items. A 14-year-old native boy called Hugo helped them carry their belongings to a cave, which was to become a makeshift home while they looked for the perfect spot to build their house. They found a place on a hill overlooking Post Office Bay. There were some remnants of an abandoned home, once owned by an Irish settler. Nearby was a tiny spring that provided water. Everything was exactly what they imagined their exiled home would be. Both Friedrich and Dora worked night and day to build their home, which only had two walls. They constructed the rooms around existing trees, and the veranda flowed into the garden. This jungle home was their paradise, a place they called Frido, combining their names. Although they were never married, people referred to them collectively as the Ritters. Tending to the land was backbreaking work, as they had to dig through layers of lava rock before reaching any type of soil worth planting something in. There was a spring with a small supply of water, but it was up a hill, walking on rocks through thorn bushes. Because of the heat, they spent most days in the nude, only wearing hip-high boots to navigate their way through thorn bushes. Friedrich was very proud of their orchard and vegetable garden. They had brought some chickens with them for eggs, as vegetarians they needed nothing else. Their island home was shared with tortoises, flamingos, and lizards. However, large mammals like wild pigs, cattle, and donkeys roamed the land as well. Previous pioneers had brought the animals as a food source, but left them behind when they absconded. The Ritters used a gun, dynamite, and rat poison to protect their crops from these wild animals. Needless to say, it was quite violent and confronting for two pacifists who hailed from a well-developed European city. They tamed cats to help keep rats at bay, and Dor took a couple of donkeys as pets, training them to help with chores like carting water from the top of the hill. Dor was so lonely that the animals became her only friends. The feverish armchair philosopher Friedrich was adamant to prove to the world that living in one's own isolation as a vegetarian, a person could live to a ripe old age, over 100. Hard work and healthy eating, fresh air and sunshine was his recipe to fulfill Darwin's statement, survival of the fittest. Using the post barrel located at Post Office Bay, Friedrich sent letters and photographs to friends and family about their life. The recipients felt that Friedrich and Dor's adventures were worth sharing and forwarded some notes and pictures to European news publications. People lapped up the stories, thinking the couple to be somewhat eccentric and odd. Others yearned to one day do the same as Adam and Eve of the Galapagos. Without knowing, the two of them pretty much reached celebrity status back home. As a physician, Friedrich knew that personal hygiene would be a challenge in the tropics. In preparation, he pulled out all of his teeth when he was still in Berlin and swapped them for a pair of rust-proof steel dentures. Dor decided to take her chances. But in due course, her teeth started to rot, and Friedrich pulled them all out. They had no other choice but to share the one pair of dentures for eating. Friedrich believed in the importance of mastication, chewing food until it is in its finest form before swallowing. For this, the steel dentures were ideal, like having cutlery in your mouth. As time went by, Friedrich's passionate, philosophical behavior became more and more erratic. He bossed Dor around like a servant and told her what she should and shouldn't do. He disagreed with the ritual of drinking coffee and forbade her to have any. He proclaimed to be a vegetarian, but if he was offered a steak or a piece of ham, he would never pass it up. His hypocrisy got to Dor, but she didn't dare say anything. After a while, Dor realized that she was not living the dream. Far from it. Friedrich froze her out and would go for days without speaking to her. While he wrote pages and pages of philosophical musings, she was left to maintain the home and garden, a strenuous task for someone suffering from multiple sclerosis. People who followed Friedrich and Dor's story, published in the American magazine Atlantic Monthly, made the arduous journey across the Pacific to visit them. Dor was always happy to see someone, anyone. Friedrich was extremely rude and made it clear that he didn't want anyone overstaying their welcome. He wanted them to adopt his philosophy, but not in his backyard. His hostility wasn't the only element chasing new settlers away. Most people found living conditions too hard and left in search of something new after a couple of months. In August 1932, another German family arrived on Floriana Island. They were the Whitmers, Heinz, his pregnant wife Margaret, and Heinz's 12-year-old son Harry from a previous marriage. Heinz learned about the Ritters from an article he read in a Berlin newspaper. At the time, he had a good job, working as secretary to the mayor of Cologne. But he was restless and suffered from the after effects of the war. He was one of the fortunate ones who survived, but he knew there was somewhere else he had to be. His son Harry was a sickly child, and doctors advised Heinz to take the 12-year-old to a warmer climate. After reading Friedrich Ritter's letters, Heinz Whitmer was drawn to the lifestyle on Floriana Island. The fact that his wife was pregnant was a concern, but the prospect of having a qualified doctor, Friedrich Ritter, as a neighbor, put them at ease. Margaret and Heinz's son Rolf was born in January 1933. At the time, the Whitmer family was living in a disused pirate cave while Heinz and Harry were constructing their stone house close by. Friedrich Ritter helped to deliver the baby. It was long and complicated, and fortunately, it all ended well. Rolf was the first person to be born on the island, and in later years a statue was built to honor him, Don Rolf. Once on Floriana, Friedrich and Dor helped the Whitmers to build their own homestead, a stone home they called Casa de la Paz, House of Peace. The Whitmers preferred to keep to themselves. There was not much interaction between them and the Ritters. Both households liked their space. They did not travel halfway around the world to live in each other's pockets. They were in the Galapagos because they wanted to be alone. In later years, the Whitmers became known as the Galapagos Family Robinson. But the peaceful coexistence was shattered with the arrival of Austrian actress, self-proclaimed Baroness Eloise Wagner de Bosque. She stepped onto Floriana Island on the 15th of October, 1932, 2 months after the Whitmers arrived. During the war, the Baroness worked as a secretary in Constantinople. When it all ended, she did not quite know where to go or what to do. Her love for performing landed her a role in a cabaret, where one night she met a French merchant, a man with the last name Bosque. They got married and moved to Paris, where they lived with his mother. The mother did not like her new daughter-in-law and knew just how to get rid of her. Madame Bosque invited a parade of eligible bachelors to her home, and before long, Eloise had not only one, but two German lovers, Robert Bubi Philipson and Rudolf Lorenz. At the time, Ecuador encouraged colonization of its islands. They were offering free plots of land with hunting and fishing rights. On top of all of that, settlers would not be required to pay taxes for 10 years. It was very inviting, and the Baroness dreamt of living on a tropical island with her men. Bosque filed for divorce, and as part of the settlement, Baroness was given a boutique in Paris. She employed her suitors. Lorenz managed the store, and Philipson was the salesman. None of them knew how to run a boutique, and together they decided to chase an idyllic life on an island in the Galapagos. The Baroness sold the boutique and, without settling debts, set off for Ecuador. The idea of being a frontier woman did not appeal to her at all. Baroness Eloise Wagner de Bosquet wanted a life of luxury. Her vision was to build a lush hotel for yacht-sailing jet sets who traversed the Pacific. She would call the hotel Hacienda Paradiso. The Baroness claimed that she was a descendant of the composer Wagner. That was never proven to be a fact. Friedrich Ritter took one look at the flamboyant new arrival and her companions and immediately disliked them. He would go on to call Lorenz and Philipson servile gigolos. Besides her two lovers, the Baroness also brought a group of young men with her, one more strapping than the other, to help with the construction of the hotel. An Ecuadorian man, Valdivieso, whom they'd met in Paris, served as translator and go-between, helping her make local contacts with influence. The arrival of the Baroness and her entourage on Floriana Island caused a cyclone of conflict and scandal. The Baroness was so busy fooling around that nothing much ever came of the luxury hotel she had dreamed of. Her home was never more than a hut with a couple of rooms. The threesome from Paris slept in the same bed, and the other residents of Floriana referred to the house as the Baroness's harem. The Baroness regaled everyone with colorful tales of her life. She told far-fetched stories of her adventures at sea and walked around the island with a gun and a whip. If anyone disagreed with her or annoyed her, the Baroness pointed her firearm at them. One of her hobbies was to shoot animals in the leg so she could nurse them back to health. In one incident, she aimed to hit a prospective lover in the leg so she could nurse him back to health. When she accidentally shot one of her other lovers in the stomach, he survived and never reported the incident. A psychologist who studied the inhabitants of Floriana would later conclude that this behavior was a sign of borderline personality disorder with sociopathic tendencies. The Whitmers managed to keep to themselves and went about their business as before. This was not the case for Friedrich Ritter, who grew to despise the Baroness every fiber of his being. Visitors who wrote articles about meeting the Baroness sometimes called her the Robinson Crusoe of Floriana. This did not go down well with the other inhabitants of the island, and they realized their peaceful, insular life would never be the same again. Besides, Robinson Crusoe was Friedrich Ritter's favorite book, and he was not going to let the whimsical Baroness defame the legend. Ritter wrote to Ecuadorian authorities in his capacity as a medical professional. He said there was a madwoman on the island who needed to be committed to an institution as soon as possible. The governor of Galapagos made a journey to the island to follow up on the report. But instead of finding a solution to the conflict, he fell under the spell of the Baroness. She charmed him into allocating 4 square miles of the island to her, where she would build her hotel. The Whitmers and the Ritters were only given 50 acres each. Baroness left Floriana with the governor, spending a rumored sinful couple of weeks with them at his private estate on San Cristobal, also known as Chatham. The Baroness returned to the hut-sized Hacienda Paradiso and proclaimed herself as the Empress of Floriana. Her antics attracted people to the island, and passing yachts made a point of visiting the island to meet the Baroness. American millionaires made trips with the sole purpose of meeting her. Many of her visitors brought elaborate gifts and funded work she wanted to complete on Hacienda Paradiso. Tensions rose among the permanent residents of Floriana as the Baroness intercepted her neighbor's mail. Before Friedrich Ritter's letters were sent off to Germany, the Baroness edited them, making herself into the vibrant heroine, a seductive siren luring sailors to her hut. "The man isn't born who can resist me," she wrote. She also concocted half-truths about the weird and wacky Ritters. She told stories to visitors to the island, who in turn told international journalists. A wealthy science and exploration enthusiast from Southern California, Captain Hancock visited Floriana on the Valero III. The captain, who had become well acquainted with the Germans on Floriana, always brought supplies. He even brought a set of dentures for Dora. Captain Hancock was a cellist and entertained the islanders on his ship. On one occasion, he delivered international newspapers containing articles about their island community. Margaret Whitmer recalled how the stories blew them away. Apparently, the Baroness is not only an empress, she also has a court of 12 noblemen, has created a terror regiment, and had Dr. Ritter taken prisoner and led away in chains. We discussed it later with Dr. Ritter, and we laughed heartily. The Baroness laughed about it as well, and said she wonders who's responsible for all such tales. With the help of the crew of Valero 3, the Baroness and her lovers made a silent short film called The Empress of Floriana. The Baroness starred as the terrifying yet irresistible pirate. But the co-inhabitants of Floriana did not often laugh together. Everyone knew the tall tales were distributed by the Baroness. She didn't stop at that either. One night, Phillipson stole Dora's donkey and released it in Whitmer's vegetable garden. Hines saw the destruction to his crop and saw the donkey. Thinking it was a feral animal, he shot it. A storm was brewing. Anyone who came to the island could sense it. In his travel story, Monsumen's Reise, Danish travel writer Hakon Milch wrote, "When Ritter and the Baroness have broken each other down to the level of the ground, paradise and Eden have gone down to smoking hell. Whitmer will still be sitting outside his little comfortable home, sucking his pipe." In addition to fighting with the neighbors, the Baroness also brought conflict into her own hacienda. In fact, there was big trouble in paradise. Although Rudolph Lorenz was her favorite lover while they lived in Paris, the Baroness had turned her affections to Booby Phillipson. In the wink of an eye, Lorenz was out, and Phillipson was in. Gradually, Lorenz became more and more of a slave, doing backbreaking work at Hacienda Paradiso. On the insistence of the Baroness, Phillipson beat him up every chance he got. Lorenz's health began to deteriorate, and he realized that he had to get himself out of this abusive situation. He desperately wanted to return to Europe, but would have to wait until the next ship arrived at Floriana so that he can catch a ride. The Whitmer family agreed that Lorenz could live with them in the meantime. However, the Baroness and Phillipson left Floriana before Lorenz could. The Ritters recalled a visit from Margaret Whitmer and Lorenz at the end of March, with the good news that the Baroness and Phillipson had left the island. According to Margaret, the Baroness stopped by the Whitmer's house and told her that they were joining some friends on a yacht to Tahiti. This journey would take more than a month, and they were not likely to return. The Baroness left the hut and all of her belongings to Lorenz, who could do with it whatever he wanted to. The Ritters literally jumped for joy when they learnt the Baroness was gone. Finally, they could have some peace again. But as they began to process the news, they realized that they had not seen a yacht in Post Office Bay. Crew members on passing boats also did not recall seeing a ship at the end of March. Friedrich and Dor grew even more suspicious of their neighbors when they went through the Baroness's belongings and realized that she left absolutely everything behind. Dor felt that she would never have embarked on a journey without certain items, like her lingerie from Paris and her favorite book, Oscar Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray. Back at Frito, the Ritters came to the conclusion that Lorenz must have reached the end of his tether, snapped, and killed his lover and her boyfriend. Because Lorenz had become close with the Whitmers, Friedrich and Dor assumed that they helped him to dispose of the bodies. Rolf Blomberg, a Swedish journalist who visited the island, learnt about the disappearance of the Baroness and Phillipson, and was the first to report on it. He listened to the Whitmers' account, which was the same account Rudolf Lorenz gave. The Baroness and Phillipson left Floriana for Tahiti, and left all their belongings behind. The journalist also spoke to the Ritters, who had nothing much to add, other than confirm that they left suddenly. The journalist reported that on the morning of the 23rd of March, the Whitmers heard loud voices coming from the Baroness's place. They ran to see what was going on and found the place in disarray, like the couple left in a hurry. Lorenz told them the other two had left to go to Tahiti. Then he spent the following days dismantling the hut and selling odds and ends to the Ritters and the Whitmers. This account is strange because Margaret Whitmer's account clearly states that Madam came to the Whitmer's gate and called for Lorenz to say goodbye. After their departure, Lorenz was like a cat on a hot tin roof. He was all too eager to get away from Floriana Island and waited at Post Office Bay to see if he could spot a passing boat. When Thomas Hall, an American friend of the Baroness, came past on his yacht, Lorenz declined his invitation to catch a ride. Instead, he waited another couple of weeks, and eventually, on the 20th of July, convinced a Norwegian fisherman called Trygve Nuggerud to take him along. The seas were high and the current strong, so Nuggerud wanted to wait it out for a couple of days. His fishing boat, Dinamita, was not in the greatest of condition, and he didn't want to take the risk. Lorenz offered him more money, and eventually Nuggerud caved, making the biggest mistake of his life. Lorenz said goodbye to the Ritters and the Whitmers, and was relieved to finally get away from the place that had become his own personal hell. Tragically, he was never seen alive again. On the 21st of August, 1935, 6 weeks after Lorenz left, the residents of Floriana received news that he was missing. His plan was to go to Guayaquil, but that was quite a journey. First, they'd have to go to Santa Cruz Island, then San Cristobal, from where Lorenz intended to take a ferry to Guayaquil. But they never made it there. It was presumed that Nuggerud's motor had failed, and without sails, they were swept out to sea. With no further news, they all accepted that Lorenz didn't make it. It was a strange and quiet time on Floriana in the months that followed. The Ritters and the Whitmers tried to continue with their lives, the way it was before the Baroness arrived. Friedrich Ritter withdrew into his writing, and Dora was lonelier than ever. Her condition was getting worse, but she was expected to keep up the pace of the daily chores. The chickens weren't doing well, and they were no longer laying eggs. Knowing that they needed protein, Dora and Friedrich decided to eat some home canned chicken. The next morning, Friedrich was very ill. Assuming that it was food poisoning, Dora stuck her finger down her throat and vomited, hoping she would not get sick too. Friedrich became shaky and feverish. And when paralysis set in after 2 days, Dora went to the Whitmers, asking for help. Ritter told Heinz Whitmer where his gun was, hinting that he wanted his neighbor to put an end to his agony, but Whitmer couldn't bring himself to do it. During the violent thrusts of Friedrich's illness, his hatred of Dora shone through. Unable to speak, he mustered up his last energy and scribbled a note. It said, "I curse you with my dying breath." Friedrich Ritter died on the morning of November 21st, 1934. Heinz and Harry Whitmer dug a grave in Friedrich's favorite corner of the garden at Friedau. They wrapped the pioneer's body in linen that Dor had brought from Germany and buried him. Margaret and little Rolf stayed with Dor at Friedau for a couple of days as she came to terms with the death of her significant other. A month later, the mummified remains of two Europeans were discovered on Marchena Island, the northernmost island of the Galapagos Archipelago. It was the bodies of Rudolf Lorenz and fisherman Trygve Nuggerud. This was nowhere close to their intended destination of San Cristobal. Eyewitnesses confirmed that the men made it to Santa Cruz, but must have run into trouble along the way, and made it to the shore on the desert island of Marchena. The unnamed deckhand, who was only ever referred to as an Indian, was nowhere to be found. His fate remains a mystery. Lorenz and Nuggerud had perished on the beach due to dehydration. The crew who found them saw bones of birds and sea lions close to the bodies, proving that the shipwrecked men must have been alive for some time. But without water, and nowhere to hide from the unforgiving sun, meat wasn't enough to keep them alive. When they were found, they were lying next to Nuggerud's boat, the Dinamita, with an upside-down flag on a mast, a makeshift distress signal. Nuggerud's mummified hand was still clutching the rope. The mysterious disappearances and deaths, within a short succession of each other, became known as the Galapagos Affair. To this day, all of the cases remain unsolved. Heinz Whitmer's diary confirmed that there was a formal investigation into the disappearance of the Baroness and Philipson. Whitmer talks about a group, led by the Major, who came to Floriana for a day. They questioned his family and looked around for evidence. They left that night, empty-handed. In his book, The Galapagos Affair, author John Treherne theorizes that, on that fateful March morning, the Baroness and Philipson attempted to lure Lorenz into a trap, by talking about a supposed trip to Tahiti. Treherne considers the possibility that Lorenz knew it was a setup, and with Friedrich Ritter's help, either poisoned or shot the diabolical couple. Lorenz was a good shot and a great hunter, and the doctor was known to keep poison at Friedau. Smithsonian scientist Waldo L. Schmidt visited Floriana Island and its neighboring isles throughout the early 1930s and knew all the intricate details of love and war among the inhabitants of Floriana. He kept detailed notes of conversations and recorded videos of his visits. He recovered a typed document written by Friedrich Ritter. He notes that neither himself nor Dorr saw any yachts coming into Post Office Bay on the morning of the 28th of March. Their home had the best view of the bay, and if there had been a vessel, they would have spotted it for sure. In fact, there had been no ships in the bay since that January. He recalled the exact day in question because it was Dorr's birthday, and Rudolf Lorenz had come around with a cake and presents, and the good news about the departure of the Baroness and Philipson. The Whitmers did not mention their suspicions regarding another death, that of Friedrich Ritter. According to Margaret, Friedrich made a comment that it would be ironic if a vegetarian would die of food poisoning. He also joked sardonically that his fate was sealed. He had wished the Baroness dead so many times. Perhaps death was his punishment. Margaret Whitmer didn't quite buy the story that Friedrich was suffering from food poisoning. She wondered why the doctor only fell ill the morning after eating the chicken and not during the night. From the start, she suspected that Dorr had poisoned Friedrich because she had had enough of his emotional abuse towards her. Margaret also knew that Friedrich had written his wife in Germany, asking her to join him. He was also planning on sending Dorr back to Germany. Dorr did not go to the Whitmers for help until Friedrich was frail, 2 days into his illness. Shortly before the Baroness and Philipson disappeared, Lorenz killed a wild pig with the nickname the Satanic Boar, and the Whitmers and Ritters processed the carcass and canned the meat. However, it had become contaminated, and they couldn't eat it. However, Friedrich fed it to his chickens. He theorized that if the chicken meat was boiled and canned, there would be no problem. Dorr said that when she prepared the chicken with Friedrich that night, they were concerned because it didn't smell right, so they boiled it twice, hoping it would kill any bacteria. As a doctor, Friedrich should have known that reheating chicken multiple times was looking for trouble, even though he was not used to cooking meat. In his diary, Heinz Whitmer noted that in the first weeks of November, his own chickens had died suddenly. He suspected a wild dog or a fox of being responsible, but in mid-November, he learned that Ritter's chickens had also died. Could it be that the chickens had some kind of fowl disease? Could it be that this contaminated the meat that caused Ritter's death? In the end, law enforcement in Ecuador ruled Friedrich Ritter's death an accident, and Dorr was allowed to return to Germany as soon as she could find a way to leave the Galapagos. In December, the Valero III discovered the bodies of Lorenz and Nygerud and arrived on Floriana to learn that Friedrich Ritter had also died. Dorr was distraught and focused on her future plans, so when asked about the Baroness, she only spoke briefly. Entomologist John Garth diarized his conversation with Dorr. When asked about the Baroness and Philipson, Dorr talks of hearing screams and alludes to the occurrence of terrible events. She's too distraught to give us anything in the way of details. Unsatisfied with Dorr's account, we proceed to the Whitmers so we could hear their version of these happenings. We were startled to find the Baroness's tin roof now residing atop the Whitmers' home. The captain's query finds that Margaret maintained that the Baroness and Philipson boarded a yacht to Tahiti. I felt as if I was watching Sherlock Holmes at work. But after much relating and many questions, the captain reached no definitive conclusions. Dorr Stach left with the Valero III and returned to Germany. She was determined to get Friedrich's work out into the world, to make his dream of becoming an esteemed philosopher come true. She never succeeded, and the task fell on Friedrich's nephew. And according to his foreword in Friedrich's book, Dorr refused to assist in any way. Dorr wrote her own book, titled Satan Came to Eden, a survivor's account of the Galapagos Affair, about her experiences living in the Galapagos as a settler. She details her last days with Friedrich Ritter and makes no mention of his alleged dying breath curse on her. She passed away in Berlin in May 1943 due to heart failure. Dorr Stach Kerwin always suspected Rudolf Lorenz had killed his ex-lover and his romantic rival and burnt their bodies in the acacia woods on the island. She claimed fire from acacia wood burnt so hot it even incinerated animal carcasses. It was also possible that he fed their bodies to the sharks circling the island. Dorr felt that the Whitmers most likely knew the truth and that they went along with the Tahiti story because they felt sorry for Lorenz. Of the first settlers, only the Whitmer family remained on Floriana Island. They had another child, a daughter they called Ingeborg Floriana. When tourism to the island boomed in later years, they became wealthy. Margaret Whitmer published her own account of life on the island, called Floriana. She passed away in 2000 at the age of 95. Until the end, she maintained that the Baroness and Philipson left for Tahiti, as she said all those years before. If she knew anything else, she took it to her grave. Filmmakers Dana Goldfein and Dan Geller made a documentary called The Galapagos Affair, Satan Comes to Paradise, using original footage and diary inscriptions, enabling the inhabitants of Floriana Island to tell their own story. It is a chilling account of everything that happened and is highly recommended viewing. Today, about 100 residents live on Floriana Island. Many of them are direct descendants of the Whitmers. Charles Darwin's writings inspired all the original inhabitants of Floriana, especially through his famous quote, "It is not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent. It is the one most adaptable to change." Perhaps Friedrich Ritter was too focused on the first part of Darwin's famous quote, "survival of the fittest." The hardworking, non-sensationalist Whitmers embodied the second part, "survival of the ones most adaptable to change." They stayed on the island forever, surviving to tell the strange tale of the Baroness and her lovers, and the storm that their arrival on the island caused all those years ago. If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also, visit and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/evidencelockerpodcast to see more about today's case. If you like our podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcast or wherever you're listening right now. This was The Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.